the University Tower chimes, bringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. Professor Beth Oljar is here from the Department of Philosophy. What's going on, Beth?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm just hanging in there. It was a crazy registration week, like it always is, you know?
Yes. My intro section seemed to have closed in a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Your reputation precedes you.
You are so coveted.
Yeah. Not entirely sure that, you know, it's me they're coveting is perhaps the time in which the courses are offered, but.
That reminds me of Father Jerry Albright teaching biology back in the day. He reached a certain number of years at the university and demanded a certain time key. He's like, this will make me very popular. 10 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I always thought that that was really funny. I'm like, that's one way to do it, Father. Oh, my gosh.
I do 10, 11, 12, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That's my morning is kind of my sweet spot. So
you got it. You got it. Coming to us from the Department of Being Retired, Professor Jim Tubbs, formerly of Religious Studies.
Hello, hello.
And what are you finishing up with this term, teaching?
Oh, I've got two sections of healthcare ethics that I'm doing now.
This is that time of year where Zombie Beth appears and disappears as the papers come and go.
Well, one of the advantages of teaching symbolic logic is no papers.
Very nice. Yes.
You either did the proof correctly or you didn't.
Or you did not. That's nice. That's nice. Currently possibly not grading any papers is Professor Dave Chow.
I'm not. I'm not grading anything at all.
Well, so. Yeah, but we haven't asked you what project you're into right now.
I'm working on Facebook Messenger.
Oh, interesting.
So they're launching a new Facebook Messenger sometime soon in about 4 years. I just got the script this morning and started drawing it today. So
incredible. Continuing around the horn, Professor Dan Maggio is here of the FIRST organization. How deep do your FIRST festivities go, Dan?
So a couple of programs, they run from like November through March. And then the big high school program doesn't really have events until March, April.
Okay.
So we're just kind of getting geared up. It's very quiet, so everybody must be focused.
Crack out your drills and your screwdrivers because it's time to build some robots. Absolutely.
It is.
That's awesome. Well, panelists, we are especially pleased that Professor Andrew Papa, the Department of Performing Arts at Detroit Mercy, is again a guest panelist. Thanks for joining us today, Andrew.
Happy to be here. This is fun.
Excellent.
Thanks for having me.
Masochism.
Oh. And it makes us so much more dramatic.
Indeed. Andrew, how is your fall 22 semester gone?
It's gone well. It's gone well. It's been interesting. I wasn't involved in the first production that we did, which was a production called Airness, which was about air guitar. Right. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed being an audience member, but we're just buckling down to start. We have auditions next week for Pride and Prejudice, which I will be dialect coaching, and I will also be performing in. Which I'm excited.
Wow.
Awesome.
Cool.
Awesome.
You're going to be Mr. Darcy?
Cool. I'm not. No. That'll go to a student. I'll be playing Mr. Collins.
Oh, and, the pastor. Okay.
And I'll be playing Miss Bingley. So Mr. Bingley's sister.
Mm. Wow. I can't wait.
Andrew, I was going to ask you today. Did you hear about Wayne State's Hillbury Theater?
Oh, well, the fact that I think it's
closing. What happened?
Because they're moving into the new building.
Oh, right. Yeah. They had like a multi-million dollar for the music program, but because it's all kind of going to be all part of the same sort of network of performance.
Yeah. Okay. Because I love that building. That's all. So it's a gorgeous.
The Hillbury is now going to be a jazz venue.
Oh, is that going to be the Vlade Jazz?
Very okay. Nice. Well, everybody, I think you know this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. If you don't stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. Okay, we've got some rando questions. Oh, nice little backstory for one of our listeners, someone brand new. I was in radio at KLSU in Baton Rouge, which was the LSU student radio station. Fun fact, we were granted special permission by the FCC to use a K, even though we were on the other side of the Mississippi. That's kind of cool. Yes, he said La Crosse State University already had WLSU, so we couldn't use that. I've listened to ATP on occasion since 1980.
Wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was an areographer's mate or meteorologist in the Navy, an earth science minor, and even did a few years as a weatherman on WAFB-TV, which was the CBS affiliate in Baton Rouge. These compel my questions. Rewrite them if you feel necessary. I'm going to put that on my next exam and see how that goes.
Rewrite the questions if you feel it necessary.
Yep. He says, thanks. I'll be listening. Rick Arnett of Beaverton, Oregon. Thanks for sending these, Rick. That's awesome.
Hey, my hometown.
There you go.
That's the suburb of Portland I grew up in.
That's so cool. I'm guessing named after Oregon State, or maybe the other way around. I don't know.
I think just probably the predominance of the beaver industry in Oregon historically. Mm-hmm. So that's our state. You know, we're the beaver state. So
That's right. That's
the mean streets of Oregon. That's all.
We were the Beaverton High School Beavers.
All right. Let's see what we can do with these. Professors, he says, you may want to spell this, Matt. I think I will. I think we're all familiar with the concept of frost. So what makes hoarfrost, H-O-A-R, frost, different than regular frost?
Size of the crystals?
That's what I was thinking, too.
That's basically what we're looking for here. They're kind of feathery.
And longer, right? Mm-hmm.
Comes from an old English word. So where's Heather? You know, when you need her, refers to making a beard. A beard would be long, white.
Oh.
And so that's where there's actually a number of animals that have that word hoar in front of them. And they all have long white hair associated with them. So pretty interesting.
That's like Roy Finkenbein's beard these days.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Our very own refrigerator salesman is looking more Clausian-like all the time.
Yep. I was about to say, you mean Santa. Yeah. The feathery frost forms in very specific climactic conditions. The air must be still and be very, very cold. So there you go. Which of these is not an official NOAA type of precipitation?
Oh.
Snow flurries, snow drops, snow grains, snow pellets.
Snow drops.
I'm going to say snow drops.
Yeah, snow drops. You're right. Of course, we all know that's a candy.
I was just going to say, isn't that like a jujube or a raisinette or something like that?
And Rick is quick to point out, don't confuse them with snow caps. Those are totally different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
I remember I used to throw those things off the balcony at the Farmington Civic Theater.
In 1977, Fleetwood Mac had a hit. I believe we're all familiar with it, Dreams. Stevie Nicks crooning in the background, thunder only happens when it's raining. That is completely incorrect, but do you know why?
Why it's incorrect?
Yes.
Yeah, you don't need rain for thunder, right?
It has to do with air pressure, right?
That is exactly what it says. Thunder is caused by the rapid expansion of air around a bolt of lightning. It does not require precipitation to take place. That's right.
Okay, who wants to tell Stevie Nicks?
Not Lindsey Buckingham.
You know, I suspect she's already well aware of the fact that her lyrics are sometimes obscure at best, as Christine McVie said. So,
yeah, this is
they're written in South Detroit. That's why.
A side question that was on Jeopardy the other night, yes, by the way. That was nice. They had a really, really nice question on Jeopardy. What city is da-da-da-da-da, doesn't have a south side, and as far as we can tell, is south of Southfield, or, you know, what is it?
East of Northville. No, east of Northville, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was just like, yeah, the guy knew it was Detroit. I was like, that was awesome. That was great.
Yeah, I think Steve Perry was staying in the Renson.
Probably.
He wrote that song. I think that made
the story that I had heard was that the reason that he selected South Detroit as the lyric, not he supposedly knew that there was no South Detroit. He just liked the way it sounded.
Ah, yep. Well, that'll work.
It sounds better than Windsor.
Yeah, exactly.
For the sake of the song, he just liked the way that it sounded. That's the story that I had read.
That sounds about right.
That would not surprise me either.
I would buy that.
And it does sound good.
Professors, what is precipitation that never reaches the Earth's surface called?
Abandoned.
Fog.
It's not what it says here.
What, like some kind of updraft? Rainbow maker?
We're talking some pretty specific parlance. I don't even know how I could give you a clue, except for it's akin to the word we use in the zodiac, the symbol in the zodiac that represents the Virgin.
Virgo.
The zodiac symbol is Virgo, right?
Oh,
for the Virgin. And apparently it's called Virga when precipitation never reaches the ground. It's kind of interesting.
That's weird.
I suppose that planes would notice that, but not many other people would if the rain was not reaching the ground. Professors, you have four choices to hit the world's largest hailstone. Was it 3.5, 4.8, 6.4, or 8 inches across?
Eight.
Me too.
Absolutely incredible. 8 inches across with an 18.5 inch circumference. And actually weighed 1.9375 pounds. Man, that's going to take your head right off.
That's going to take out kids and pets, especially if you have a whole storm of those.
Absolutely.
It's bigger than my melon, okay?
Incredible.
Wow.
It says that the person, Lee Scott, who collected this monster, said that he had originally planned to shred it and make daiquiris. But decided against it, put it in his freezer, and delivered it to the National Center for Atmospheric Research.
And use it for martinis. Oh.
It makes me think of that line in Ghostbusters. That's a hell of a Twinkie.
Now imagine a Twinkie the size of Manhattan Island. That's a big Twinkie. Have you ever heard of, it looks like we're doing a lot of weather here, professors.
I sense the theme.
Yeah.
Yes. Question. Sonny Elliott.
What's Doblier's law? D-O-B-L-E-A-R. Doblier's law. Has you ever heard of it before?
Has that got something to do with the Doppler effect?
No. It was published in 1897 by Amos Dolbear, Dobler. And he noted that something was happening in the summer evening and that it could be correlated directly to the ambient air temperature.
Thunderstorms?
What about like the frequency of
fireflies?
Crickets? Cicadas?
Yes. Beth was almost there and Dave hit it. It's the number of times you hear the cricket chirping. There is a formula you can use to determine the ambient air temperature as you hear that cadence. Hmm. That is really interesting. It's actually Doppler's law. To count the number of chirps over 14 seconds, add 40 to get the temperature within 1 or 2 degrees Fahrenheit. Pretty cool.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it's totally bizarre.
Yeah, but can you imagine like counting them though?
Yeah. How bored do you have to be?
Well, not to mention Matt and myself, we'd have to fend off the motorcycle noise off of 696 every night. That's also.
Yep. A cloud often seen with tornado activity is called cumulonimbus mammatus. What does this translate to from Latin? Three different parts Rick is saying here. Cumulo, nimbus, and mammatus.
Run.
Bambi, run.
Away.
Yeah, far away.
There you go.
Well, I think you could handle cumulo if you think about words that we use like cumulative.
Some.
What? Yeah.
Like big?
Added on.
It means pile. It means pile.
Okay.
Nimbus actually is Latin for cloud, so I'm giving you a free pass, so like 100% on that one. You only get one guess. Don't think too hard. Mammatus. M-A-M-M-A-T-U-S.
Large.
No, that would be directed in the direction of why we are called mammals. So you can say mothered if you want to. So basically...
Milk?
Yeah, it says we described it as an udder-like pouch.
Piles of milky clouds?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. That would give birth to a tornado. That's pretty weird, but that's the way it got its name. So
I'm just imagining Sonny Elliott describing this on his chalkboard, mashing that word together.
Or Chuck Gatica.
Those were a great set of questions. Thanks for sending them in, Rick.
Wow.
We're going to move on to another set of questions I have here from longtime question sender, Farah Shimbo. Hello there, profs. Hope the year is going well. 10 questions about the difference between one thing and another thing. 80% is passing. Every once in a while, Andrew, they actually give us the rubrics. Pretty interesting.
Oh.
A good luck from your old friend, Farah Shimbo. What's the difference between a marsh and a swamp?
Location?
The body of water.
Location, location, location.
You can have a marsh without a swamp has a bigger body of water.
That's basically what it says here, Beth. Yeah. Oh. It says that a swamp is an extension of an area around a river or lake where a marsh is just a piece of wetland.
Right. Yay me.
Yeah. Yay you.
Yay go, Beth. You.
Science not being my thing.
Now, Dan, what were you going to say?
If it was separated from another water source, so if it's isolated.
There you go. Yeah. Nice work. Nice work.
I was going to say the size of the alligators.
How about what's, I've actually often wondered this based on the fact that I bought my very first piece of porcelain cookware fairly recently. What's the difference between the porcelain in, let's say, a vase and the porcelain that you would use to cover your tub or stove?
One is fired.
They're both fired.
I think they both are.
The heat, the temperature at which it's fired.
Yeah.
The thickness of the material?
I mean, that's a good guess too, Andrew.
It's obvious truth.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the best way. It's sort of beating around the bush with the explanation. Well,
the difference is the vase cracks easy and the tub does not.
That is also true. Absolutely. Oh my gosh.
So one is vitreous and one is not, but maybe.
I mean, we're pretty close with a lot of the compositional stuff that we're saying, and I'm the material scientist, so I'm totally embarrassed, but it has to do with the amount of what's called kaolin or pure clay that's added to it. There is more in one than the other, and actually that is not specified which is which. So,
okay.
Yes. For the record, one of the ways that we may be able to add, because this is the cool thing about minerals, even though I'm an organic chemist, I dabble in the inorganic every once in a while. You can add any kind of mineral to these sort of things just to see what new properties it's been given. And the reason we know the word bone china is because ground bones or bone ash was added to the porcelain. So that's not creepy at all and won't keep me up tonight at all. Yeah.
Well, it made it like more transparent.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing the ceramics kids at CCS, some of the things that they would throw on their vessels, unreal. Horse hair was also a huge thing for one of the professors there. He did these gorgeous vessels and he threw a horse hair on it while they're still like blazing hot. Just for cool textures and things like that. So,
yes. Okay, everybody back up here and give Jim some room. What's the difference between an ocean liner and a cruise ship?
Oh.
Well, a cruise ship has a thinner hull. It is built for traversing calmer waters. It's usually got more decks. An ocean liner has a reinforced hull and a lower center of gravity. Because it has to deal with heavy ocean swells.
Spot on, Jim. And Farah actually added to the end, and any other differences that Professor Tubbs can think of. So, perfect. And interestingly, Jim, even though I believe you alluded to it, it says if cruise ship is, we'll say, shallow water port because of all the things you mentioned, and deep water ports for the ocean liner. So you're not going to take a Carnival cruise to go from New York to Ireland. I don't think you would.
Well, actually, that a lot of the cruise liners do reposition in the fall and the spring. And so they do go across. Mm-hmm. I have, however, been on a cruise ship in the North Atlantic, and the roll you get is sometimes pretty, I mean, they have to close all the doors out to the decks. But you're going out there.
Yikes.
Ooh, the SS Minnow.
Professors, we get these questions about food and drink later in the second show, and it really does kind of hurt because we all start thinking about dinner, but not just dinner. Let's go beyond that. What's the difference between bourbon and a Scotch or Irish whiskey?
The grain it's made from. It's made from corn.
Corn, yes. Corn's the answer.
Well, I was going to say the sweetness factor. Is the corn a part of what makes it sweeter or less?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
You hit it right on the head there, Andrew. and the absolutely hilarious, from the chemist's perspective only, sub-definition, which is bourbon can only be made in the state of Kentucky.
Right.
The end.
Like champagne can only be made in the Champagne region of France.
But that's why I said bourbon is American, right?
That's Scotch it. And whiskey, that's exactly, or not, right. You know? Yeah. Professors, what's the difference between a barrister and a solicitor?
Oh, a barrister handles criminal kind of cases, and a solicitor handles
civil
stuff, wills and things like that.
Basically, that's what it says here. Only a barrister would go to court.
A barrister goes to the bar, which is at court.
Do they have to wear wigs? Because I would like to know that.
Barristers do. Solicitors don't.
So on my door in my neighborhood, do I have to have no solicitors and no barristers? I'm trying to have dinner.
No moleste.
No, just to be on the safe side. That sounds like a great idea.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
You might need a barrister to get the solicitors excluded.
Barristers welcome, solicitors not. Yeah.
As far as invertebrates go, because I know you've all been thinking about this, what's the difference between a tentacle, or possessing a tentacle, versus an arm? Note for the record that an octopus has arms, not tentacles.
Oh.
Ooh.
Suckers on them?
Can be controlled independently?
It's sort of a mixture of what both Dan and Dave have said. Tentacles have a tiny little suction cup or whatever at the end only, and an arm would have the little suction cups along the entire length of the appendage.
Wow. Well, you'll have to tell Jules Verne about that.
Or James Mason and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between chocolate and carob?
About $3 a pound.
Well, chocolate comes from cocoa beans.
Cocoa beans.
Yeah, and carob comes from carob seeds.
That's right. It's actually quite great. Well, you know, they're completely different plants. Cacao is a tree, and carob is a bean. Apart from that, there's also the fact that the former makes one happy, and the latter disappoints in every way.
Pretty much right. Yeah.
I mean, I've had carob before. It's not the end of the world. I mean, it works in a pinch, right?
But Roland Cronkite brought to a party one time a carob pie that was excellent. It was made with carob and tofu, and I don't know what else, but it was actually quite good. It tasted very chocolatey.
It sounds terrible, but you know, I mean,
yes, it does.
Farah has left us with this last little bit of interestingness. Speaking of invertebrates, what's the difference between an insect and a bug? Parentheses, you can interpret this any way you want.
Well, a bug is made by Volkswagen, and an insect is made by Mother Nature.
There you go. Like a red-blooded Detroiter. There you go.
Does it have to do with the number of body parts?
It's not what it says here. It's more about what it does.
So insects have some specific purpose with respect to the earth.
I've never heard this before. I would treat the terms as interchangeable, but Farah has that all bugs are insects, but bugs are the kinds of insects who eat by sucking, you know? So I guess you're thinking mosquito or whatever.
Oh, okay. So it's a subset.
A symbolic logic, right, Beth? I mean, seriously.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So how do the other bugs eat? Gnawing?
They have mandibles.
Well, like a praying mantis chews things.
Yeah, I mean, spiders chew, right? And they don't suck, I don't think.
I haven't never asked a spider, so I don't know.
Bugs are suckers.
This would be mosquitoes and ticks and lice, things like that.
Ooh, true.
Yeah.
Professors, we have just enough time left, and Andrew, you are a lucky man today, because we have a set of open-ended questions by the family Burrows from Valencia, California. We call them the Ask the Professor Imponderables, and this week we are talking about, what is the favorite piece of art that you own?
Well, my oldest daughter is in kindergarten, and it's really fascinating to see their fine motor skills just explode at this age. I mean, in August, everything was abstract. Everything was abstract. I had no idea what she was making. And just the other day, and she gave it to me. Did I bring it? I did.
Come on. Let's see it.
We can show it on camera. We can show it on the radio.
It doesn't work for radio, but it works for Zoom.
Oh.
Wow.
But like everything, the stem, the flower, and even Ivy, love, and then of course D-A, oh no, I ran out of space, I'll put the D over here type of thing.
That's wonderful.
She's progressed to representationalism.
I've got a future intern.
Yeah. It's not abstract.
And so to progress from something abstract to this, from August to November, to go from something like,
wow,
unbelievable.
They're like little sponges.
I would probably say that. Beyond that, it's tough to say because I've got films, I've got music, I've got other things, but that's the one that comes to mind right now.
It's representational.
That's awesome.
Well, my favorite, I'll show you. It's a piece by Slava Ilyayev.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
What I like about it is he uses the knife, the palette, to do a lot of the leaf. So it's sort of three-dimensional.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I have a print called Brainstorming, which involves basically a woman sitting and thinking, and the hair is kind of dramatic, that a friend of mine did in college, for which she said I was the model.
Nice.
So that's kind of cool.
How about you, Dan?
I don't really have a favorite. I have lots of things that I enjoy looking at, but my interests are all over. I like black and white photography, and I have a lot of it around me.
That's cool.
Your Kandinsky prints are kind of cool.
I have Kandinsky prints, which I really like. And then there's this local artist you can't see behind me. I can't remember her name. She just does cool drawings. So I can't give you an answer. Kandinsky would be on near the top, I'm sure, because I love his geometric work.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I have one of them hanging in the TV room, actually.
That's very cool. This is going to be an interesting answer for Dave, who generates art on a minute-to-minute basis.
I know. You can't say yourself.
I can't even say my wife, believe it or not. I'm going to go back to like an early influence or something like that, maybe, because I'm looking around my office. I mean, I got Simpsons, I got Mad Magazine, I've got a little of everything in here. I think the one that hits me right now, I probably have to say, like, I got an original piece of Mort Drucker art in my files downstairs from Mad Magazine.
That's cool.
So I don't know that. Or I got original Mike Mignola Hellboy floating around here somewhere. I mean, I got some pages of his Dracula art. I mean,
nice.
Matthew, what about yours?
Well, I honestly just got it a few months ago because I've never had an office at home in my entire life until we moved recently. And I've always wanted a print of John Cuidor's The Headless Horseman Pursues Ichabod Crane from 1858.
Oh, how could I not have guessed that?
Yeah, I mean, come on, right?
Hey, Mr. Halloween Man.
Yeah, but it's beautiful painting. It's very, very moody. I probably got the wrong frame for it, but I'm very pleased with myself to finally have a place to hang it. It's the sort of thing where you can't have it as an 8x5. Like, you've got to have it nice and big.
Yeah.
And I love these art companies that will give a nice print. Dave, you'd be really impressed by this digital ink print, and it's really solid,
mm-hmm,
considering the price. So I was very pleased with that. But the time has come to say goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye.
Dave.
See ya.
Jim.
Goodbye.
Beth.
Goodbye.
And Andrew.
Till we meet again.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.